Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello, my name's Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. So we're getting ready for the Spa Grand Prix this weekend in Belgium. It's one of my favourites. I know the drivers love this track, don't they? You get a lot of Formula One drivers that name this as one, if not their most favourite track to drive on. Some great corners and bends here, and some real exciting overtaking opportunities in Spa as well.
Yeah, it's the longest lap of the entire Formula One calendar. And of course, you've got that spectacular Eau Rouge section as they go up the hill, making some direction changes onto the sort of back straight, which is just fantastic to watch. And over the years, we've seen loads of amazing overtakes, especially on that back straight. Do you remember the year when Mika Hakkinen got past Schumacher and another car on the outside? Just amazing. So it should be an exciting race. And the good thing is, for a pure Formula One fan, is they reckon it's going to rain on Friday, rain on Saturday, but the rain they're predicting on Sunday is 80% chance of rain for the race, which will make this just unbelievable, because we've seen in Spa before, the track's that long and it's in the mountains, that it can be raining on one side of the circuit and completely dry on the other. So this is going to make it even more exciting this weekend, and I can't wait.
Yeah, and when you've got a whole weekend of that as well, where you've got potentially, you know, practice, qualifying and the race all potentially in the wet, you know, it makes for an exciting weekend. Because, you know, some weekends you'll get a very exciting qualifying in the rain, but then the race is very blasé and boring. But, you know, when you've got the combo of both, sometimes you have a normal qualifying and then a great wet race. But, you know, if you have a weekend of qualifying and racing in the wet, it can be a great one, which is really exciting. I love Belgium every year. I mean, there's the memory of the big crash at the start as well in the 90s. You know, and there's been so many iconic Formula One moments at Spa, isn't there?
Yeah, there really has. And with the wet qualifying, of course, we could find ourselves with a situation where you might have a Haas or a Williams, you know, on the front couple of rows, which is great because that will really mix it up. Obviously, Ferrari, who are down on straight line speed, you know, a wet qualifying and wet race could really play into their hands this weekend. So it will mix it up, which will be great for the fan.
Yeah, and we've had some new races that have been announced literally just before we started recording this. So that's now 17 races in total. We were just saying this before we started recording, weren't we? That, you know, the start of this year when we had a couple of races and then there was sort of six and then eight, and it was like, oh, are we going to get a full season? And how many races has there got to be for a championship and all that? And, you know, now to think about 17 rounds is incredible. But they've added Turkey, two races in Bahrain and Abu Dhabi as well. Turkey's in November, Bahrain in November and December. And then the last race, Abu Dhabi, is the 13th of December, which is, I can't remember a Formula One race ever being that late on in the season.
I think they've done really well. You know, the organisation part, from the way they got the teams in the bubble and the way they've organised the races. And I love the way they've gone back to old circuits that probably couldn't take capacity crowds these days. Istanbul, for instance, I think they've taken most of their grandstands down, and the track's very rarely used these days. So that's great. I think it's really imaginative that they've gone back to these old circuits. I'm really excited about Imola, really excited about Turkey, of course. You remember that great Turn 8? It was the track that Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel crashed into each other on, and that was when all the bad blood started in the Red Bull team, if you remember, back in 2010. So it's a great track, and by the looks of it, just the way they've worked out the logistics, I think they're going to drive their equipment and everything to all of these races and not fly it, which makes even more sense when you think that Turkey is sort of halfway between the Middle East and the UK, and then they finish off two rounds in Bahrain. They can drive to all of those places, which is good because that means they're not having to go into logistics of planes and flights being cancelled and all that sort of stuff. So I think they've worked it out brilliantly, Formula One. Many sports have, but I think Formula One have really led the way in dealing with putting on live attractions during this COVID universe we're all living in at the moment.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, the great thing is, of course, with the fans in Formula One, because you've got the noise of the cars and stuff like that, the fans are not so important to be there live. So it's not really taken much of the shine off of it at all. It's still bizarre seeing the drivers wearing the mask when they're getting interviewed and stuff, but it's all becoming very normal now, isn't it? You walk down the high street and you see masks everywhere. So it's all becoming the kind of the normal thing as we go through life now. But yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and it's great to see some of these tracks coming back. The good thing for the drivers as well, a lot of these drivers are saying, you know, there's no media, there's no interviews, there's no sponsorship meetings, there's no dinners with fancy people they've got to do. You know, they're just literally turning up, and it's almost old school, isn't it? Because they're turning up in a caravan, but they're obviously in these lovely motorhomes that they've got, no doubt, these drivers. But they're turning up, they're spending the weekend pretty much on their own. They're getting out and they're racing. And, you know, I think this is kind of back to basics for the drivers. So I think they're loving it. I think this is probably why Lewis is flourishing as well this year, because, you know, it's just all the hassle and all the stuff they don't like doing is taken away from them. For me already, I know, you know, we're not even halfway through this season yet, but Lewis is just on such phenomenal form this year. You know, when you see how far ahead he is already, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And you look at the Drivers' Championship, Max Verstappen now in second place, and you think, well, Bottas, really, the 3.0 never materialised. He's in the fastest car. He should be second in the Drivers' Championship. I know it's only by a couple of points, but he's not. And this almost certainly means he's not going to be able to mount a championship challenge to Lewis this year. But if he gets beaten by Max Verstappen in the standings, then that's not good for his long-term future, is it?
No, and exactly this, you know, I wonder if they've re-signed him because almost Lewis is encouraging it, because Lewis has kind of realised that Bottas lacks whatever it is that's needed to beat him, and he's very comfortable with him as a teammate. He's a good rear gunner. You know, but he lacks that kind of excitement we've discussed before. You know, we're talking about Verstappen and people like that. I know Jenson Button said this week that, you know, he's annihilating was the word he used. He's annihilating teammates. And he said he's doing that in a way that not really been seen since Schumacher and Ayrton Senna and people like that. You know, so Verstappen is being spoken about up there with the top guys, but it makes you foam at the mouth to have the option of, you know, to have Vettel and Hamilton in the Mercedes, or to have Verstappen and Hamilton in the Mercedes. You know, some of these drivers that are coming through, even Leclerc, you know, in the same car as someone like Hamilton, that would be fascinating, wouldn't it? Because I don't know. I think Hamilton mentally would struggle with that. I think somebody like Verstappen would keep him mega on his toes. And I'd personally, before Hamilton retires, I'd love to see that. Maybe he wins another couple of titles with Bottas as his teammate. Maybe they then bring someone mega in to properly fight Hamilton. And is that when he calls it a day? Is that when he goes, listen, I'm being beaten now by the young guns. Maybe it's time I walk away and retire with my 8, 9, 10 world titles, whatever he has by then.
Yeah, he's committed to 3 more years, hasn't he? I mean, it just shows you how good Max Verstappen is, in that he's clearly in an inferior car, but is able to beat the Mercedes, win races this season already, which we've seen, but able to really take the fight to them in a car which is good half a second off the pace. You know, I mean, that just shows the calibre of Max as a driver. And when you compare him to Albon, who's obviously struggled this year, but is nevertheless a decent British driver, there's a massive gap between those two when it comes to the racing and in qualifying. And that, I think, just backs up how good Max Verstappen is. And yeah, if you saw him in a top car alongside the likes of Hamilton, wow, it'd be amazing. But I think Hamilton likes the comfort blanket of someone like Bottas. It was like Michael Schumacher, who had Eddie Irvine and Barrichello as teammates. They were good, strong drivers. They were never going to challenge his position as number one in the team, and they were never going to challenge his position for winning world championships. Even when Schumacher had to sit out most of the season in 99 when he crashed at Silverstone, Eddie Irvine should have by rights won that driver's world championship, but didn't, because he just didn't have that extra bit to give that the likes of Schumacher and Hamilton and Verstappen all seem to have.
Yeah, and it's that megastar thing again, isn't it? Certain teams, Ferrari, have always been big on having majority one main major driver like a Schumacher, and then having a very good backup driver. Other teams are more keen on having two potential number one drivers to fight it out. It's just interesting how the teams run it, isn't it? But like you say, people like Schumacher, you know, they've gone through their career and they've almost set it up where they are the outright number one. It's not necessarily said or written in their contract, but, you know, they've got enough sway in the team and they like that. And they, you know, it's politics at play, isn't it? People like Hamilton are going to say, listen, you know, let's re-sign Bottas for another year. That, you know, is no harm done. He's a good driver. He's number two in the championship most of the time. Let's re-sign him. And, you know, why would they change that? Why would they rock the boat? You know, you could bring the likes of Verstappen into Mercedes and it would be incredible, but it would rock the boat, wouldn't it? And would you have another scenario with, you know, like Senna back in the day, when the teammates just clash and you have a nightmare season of two drivers Prost and Senna just head to head every race crashing. And, you know, do you go back into that nightmare? They kind of had a taste of that, didn't they, with Rosberg and Hamilton? And I think Mercedes were kind of like, we probably want to avoid this if we can in the future.
We haven't figured out what's happening with Toto Wolff yet. He hasn't made his decision as to whether he's staying with the Mercedes team or whether he's going to take more of a backseat role in that development, or whether he's going to stay as team principal, or is he going to leave the sport altogether and concentrate on his family life, because his wife now, Susie Wolff, is formally involved in Formula E. So that still needs to be sorted out, and that may affect what Hamilton decides to do, although he's already now said he's going to do at least another 3 years in Formula One. But will it be at Mercedes, or will there be a further move down the line? We've always said, haven't we, that Hamilton might want to finish his career at a team like Ferrari, although looking at their present state, I think that would probably be the last team he wants to go to. Binotto has been interviewed on Sky F1, which they're going to play out over the next few races, and apparently in that interview he's talking about the Concord agreement, he's talking about restructuring the team. This is stuff we've heard so many times before from Ferrari. Yeah, we're restructuring, we're going to look at this, we're going to make some changes. Nothing ever seems to happen, and they just seem to trundle on this season. There's no discipline, I don't think, in the team. I mean, last time out with Vettel, when they asked him whether he could stay on those tyres till the end of the race, and he went, hang on, guys, this is something we should have sorted in advance. It just gives you the impression that Ferrari are all over the place at the moment, and I can't see it being any different going into Spa this weekend.
Yeah, and Kimi Raikkonen was their last world champion, 2007, was it? So that's 13 years ago. You know, that's that for a team like Ferrari to have a gap like that for a world championship driver title is just, it's, you know, that's a long time, isn't it?
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
Probably worth mentioning the Indy 500. I know it's not Formula One, but Alonso was taking place at the Brickyard over the weekend just gone, and it was a really crazy, interesting race. I always watch the 500, always have, and sometimes you get a really crazy race where there is loads of caution periods and loads of crashes and things, and this was one of them. So it was a really interesting race. Lots of cautions from the word go, and, you know, every six or seven laps they were bringing out a full course yellow because someone had hit the wall. Marcus Ericsson, Formula F1 driver, hit the wall at one point after qualifying quite well. There was a big crash between two of the rookies, one of them British, the Askew driver. And Alonso sadly had a clutch problem and finished in 21st. It was Takumo Sato that won, who never really made it in Formula 1, but has been in IndyCar for ages. And this should give us some hope, Scott. Well, maybe you, not me. But he won that race at the age of 44.
Wow, is he 44 now? That's incredible. That's it's interesting, the 500, because it's proper motorsport, isn't it? Like when you hear words like Indy 500, it just reeks of motorsport. But just it makes me laugh how American it is as well. Like you saying, they're full course yellow and cautions, and you know that we have different terms, don't they, to what we have in Formula One, and it always makes me laugh. We got a full course yellow, but yeah, you're right. There's always some incredible accidents in IndyCar. You know, it's obviously, in my opinion, it's quite a bit more dangerous than Formula One these days. And there's always some quite spectacular things that happen during the race, but a long race. And you do see a lot of ex-Formula One guys doing quite well in IndyCars and in Indy 500, don't you? You see a lot of them that, you know, a lot of them retire, end up over there, and they do quite well in it, which is very interesting, really.
Yeah, Sato's done really well since he's won the Indy 500 twice, and he's always been sort of there or thereabouts in the regular championship as well. Max Chilton, British driver, races in IndyCar, but he is one of a handful of drivers who don't race on oval circuits. They only do the race circuits, you know, like the normal sort of Formula One racetracks, because they consider the ovals too dangerous. Although I noticed Max Chilton was racing in the 500 well down the order, and they've got this aero screen now. I don't know if you've seen it, but my goodness, it's so ugly. You can't see the drivers at all. It just looks horrible, and I'm so glad they never introduced it into Formula One and we got the Halo instead.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Alonso says about that, actually, because he's obviously driven the Halo and driven this aero screen as well. It'll be interesting to see what he feels is better, because I know a lot of drivers were saying with the aero screen that when you get to certain speeds, it vibrates and you can't see very well out of it as well. So not only is it ugly, but it might not be the best solution to that problem, kind of thing. But Alonso, you know, we spoke about this just before we started recording. The guy, you know, even though he didn't do great in this and it was a clutch problem that caused it, you know, he's incredible. He's done Dakar this year. He's coming back to Formula One. He's done the Indy 500. You know, he's done Le Mans. You know, this guy can literally get in any kind of car and produce something quite special. You know, he may not win in everything, but he's always up there. He's always a contender. He's always being spoken about. I saw some of the practice, actually, of the Indy 500, and the commentators there were saying, you know, the same thing, that this guy, you know, this guy was racing Dakar a couple of months ago, and they said, here he is in a completely different discipline. He's already on the pace in the first practice session, and, you know, they think he's special as well. And I'm excited about Alonso coming back to Formula One because he is an incredible all-round talent, Alonso. He's another guy that, you know, you put him in that McLaren with Hamilton in Hamilton's debut season. They were so closely matched, weren't they? And I rate Alonso highly.
Yeah, I do. One of the interesting things is when he got out of the car at the end of the Indy 500, basically that is it now for him until he steps into the Renault, presumably in the first round in Australia. So no competitive races between now and March next year. The reason for that is because Renault want him to solely focus on their program, which is understandable. But he spends his time karting. He still loves racing karts. And in fact, every year for the last 2 or 3 years, me and you, Scott, have been invited to the 24-hour race in Dubai, which takes place in December. And Alonso is racing in that this year. So we could be racing alongside Alonso, me and you.
Well,
we'll show him who's fast.
Yeah, we would look so average, wouldn't we? Oh, yeah. Someone like Alonso. Wow.
Yeah, so the last couple of years, he's raced in Dubai in the pro kart race over there and still keeps his hand in. So he's got his own karting track and karting program in Spain, and he spends a lot of time there. So when he won't be doing any actual competitive racing between now and the Formula One season next year, he'll be doing lots of racing. Do you know what I mean? So that's how he keeps his hand in. And I think that's amazing to have that sort of dedication to keeping that nerve of steel that you need to be a racing driver and not sort of relaxing, taking part in lots of VIP parties and events and things and chilling out until next year. No, he's still going to be doing motorsport in some form, which I think is great. It's time to get some pre-race stats from Nicky at Lights Out. He's our stat man. I was going to sing the song then for a minute. He's our stat man, and he provides some brilliant insight to Formula One and all the goings on, including lots of reports of the stats from years gone by. And you can follow him right across the race weekends at Lights Out on Twitter. He's also got a live blog that operates as well. Here's Nicky.
At the 65th Belgian Grand Prix to be held as part of the Formula One World Championship, Hamilton could equal Schumacher's record of most Spa podiums, and two champions will move up the order of most starts. Here are some of the stats to look out for over the 2020 Belgian Grand Prix weekend. First up, Lewis Hamilton could join Michael Schumacher on a record 9 podium finishes at the Belgian Grand Prix this weekend, should he finish in the top 3. Spa is a circuit at which Schumacher had some of his career highlights in F1. He made his debut here in 1991, won his first Grand Prix at Spa in 1992, set a new record of most F1 wins here in 2001, set a new record for the biggest points lead in F1 history here in 2002. He won his 7th and final title at the track in 2004 and celebrated his 300th Grand Prix here in 2012. The two drivers who have won 9 of the last 10 Drivers' Championships will be moving up the list of most F1 starts this weekend. Lewis Hamilton will overtake Ricardo Patrese as the driver to have started the 7th most races. The 2020 Belgian Grand Prix will be Hamilton's 257th appearance. Patrese made 256 starts in his career, with his last appearance coming at the 1993 Australian Grand Prix. Meanwhile, Sebastian Vettel will overtake David Coulthard and move into the top 10 of most F1 starts. This weekend will mark Vettel's 247th start. Coulthard made 246 starts in his career, with his last appearance coming at the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix. Another milestone on offer for Vettel this weekend. Should he finish the 2020 Belgian Grand Prix, he'll equal Michael Schumacher and Felipe Massa as the drivers to have completed the Belgian Grand Prix on the most occasions. Former Ferrari drivers Schumacher and Massa crossed the finish line at Spa 12 times in their careers, while future former Ferrari driver Vettel has done so 11 times so far. A top 3 finish for Valtteri Bottas at the 2020 Belgian Grand Prix will see him equal Mika Hakkinen's career tally of 51 podium finishes. Hakkinen's record is currently the second most podium finishes for a Finnish driver, bettered only by Kimi Räikkönen, who has had 103 podiums, his most recent coming at the 2018 Brazilian Grand Prix. And finally, this weekend, Belgium will become the 6th country to have hosted 65 Grand Prix. only Italy, Germany, Great Britain, the USA and Monaco have hosted more races. And in fact, later this year, Italy will become the first country to have hosted 100 races when the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix takes place at Imola in November.
Nice one, Nicky. You can follow him, as Rick said, across the race weekends at Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. Some brilliant blog stuff you can follow across the weekends as well. So the Spa Grand Prix, as we mentioned earlier, it's looking like it could be a wet race. Did you say 80-90% chance of rain on Sunday?
80% chance of rain for the race, and on the qualifying day, the day before, 60% chance. So hopefully we'll get some rain in the mix across the weekend, and it'll really spice things up.
Yeah, I've got a funny feeling, and I get these every now and again, I've got a funny feeling it's going to be a very bizarre and exciting race this weekend. I think a lot of stuff's going to happen that you go, well, wow, I didn't see that coming. And the end result is quite a weird one. And like you said before, Williams, all these teams, they stand a great chance. If there's heavy rain, you know, all of these teams, if they get the right tire at the right time, they make the pit calls at the right time. You know, any of these teams stand a good chance. And I'm really hopeful that we're going to have a really exciting race in Spa this weekend.
Well, a long-time Two Soft Compounds listener and fan, Mike Scott, says that we get our predictions wrong before every single race, and this one's even more difficult to call than a normal sort of Sunday Grand Prix where you can say, yeah, Hamilton's going to win and Verstappen will be on the podium. With this one, like you say, we're qualifying, mixing things up. It could be completely topsy-turvy, and obviously during the race on that track, if it's wet, you can imagine there will be a number of drivers who don't complete the distance simply because they're finding the conditions too tough. And the one that springs to mind is, of course, Romain Grosjean, who will almost certainly bin it in the first five laps. There's a prediction for you, Dr. Mike. But how do you see it playing out this weekend in terms of drivers who will do well and drivers who will struggle?
Yeah, again, if it's going to rain, it is literally anyone's game, isn't it? But I'm going to make a bold prediction now. I don't see Hamilton in the top three this weekend. Oh. I think something going to happen. I just got a funny feeling. Something give me water. I think Hamilton's going to be out of the top three. Whether he finishes the race or not, I don't know. But I think he's going to be out of the top three. And I can see someone like Verstappen winning this race. And if that's the case, you know, let's say Hamilton doesn't finish and doesn't score. Verstappen's right up there, right in it all of a sudden. And I just think something like that is going to happen this weekend.
Okay, well, Mike Scott, remember that prediction. My prediction is not quite as bold, I don't think, but I'm going to say Norris and Albon will be on the podium. I don't know who with, and I don't know whether either of those drivers is capable of winning this weekend, but I think with wet conditions, it's a war of attrition, isn't it? I think those two guys will come good. Albon's going to come good this season. He really has struggled with the car. They're working with him. They're helping him all they can. I hate going on the forums and seeing people have a pop at Albon. I think he's really under pressure, but he's doing his best. And we've seen some great overtaking moves in the races so far. He's just got to get to grips with the car and maybe in the wet conditions, because as we've always said, British drivers do really well in the wet because they grow up at go-karting tracks in this country where it rains all the time. So they're used to driving in those conditions, and that can often make the difference in a wet race.
Yeah, and we've seen how amazing Gasly's been in the last few races as well. And this is the irony, isn't it? The pressure's off. They're in a car that's not expected to do as well, and all of a sudden they start driving great again. And now Albon is looking quite average next to Gasly, and it was the other way around last year. And it's, to me, it's the mental game. It's the mental pressure. And I think they're both good. I think Gasly made a lot more mistakes, a lot more high-profile mistakes. And I think Albon is the safer bet. If it was me and I was in charge at Red Bull, I would keep Albon for next year at least. And I think, I think he will come good. I just think he's having a mental wobble at the moment. He needs to get his head straight. You know, once he thinks straight and he gets his confidence back and he does a few good finishes and a few good podiums, he'll be right back in it. But yeah, they need to stick with him. It's the football manager thing all over again, isn't it? Is we've lost four games, right? That manager needs to be fired. Sometimes you have to stick with it long term. Ferrari, of course, the other way. It's like, well, how long are you going to stick with this until you make some changes? Because this is not working. So it's just interesting to see these things unfold, isn't it? But I think Vettel might even do well this weekend. And there's rumours, you know, we spoke about this on text as well. There's rumours that Vettel is going to announce this weekend that he's signed for Aston Martin Racing for next year, which of course is the Racing Point team at the moment. Strong rumours that he's signed and he will be announcing that this weekend. So that's going to be interesting as well, because Will his confidence be sky high if he announces a deal like that and that's, you know, pen to paper, it's done? Is he going to go out and drive the wheels off the Ferrari because he's got nothing to lose anymore? He wants to prove himself and show the Ferrari that they've made a mistake. So it could be a really interesting race this weekend.
Well, I look forward to getting a text about 4 o'clock from Mike Scott saying Scott was wrong in his prediction and you were wrong in your prediction, Rick. But anyway, listen, we'll be back next week to review the Belgian Grand Prix. Let's hope it's a wet race. Let's hope we get a mixed up starting grid. Let's hope we get an exciting battle out there on the track. And we'll be back next week to talk all about it.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.